Great to speak with you, Mick.
Jamie, it's fantastic to have you on. Whereabouts are you these days? We lose track of all you guys. You move around a bit. And what are you doing work-wise?
Well, as we speak, I'm in Mount Eliza, which is, let's say, an hour south of Melbourne on the Mornington Peninsula, which has been home for 3 or 4 years for the family, where I have a dual role. I actually work predominantly running the AFLW program at St Kilda, which has been a wonderful journey for the last 2 or 3 years, and I sort of also have a contract role with Cricket Tas, which was once a bigger role pre-COVID, but has since sort of morphed into a list manager role, managing the playing list for the Hurricanes and the Tigers. So it's an existence where I spend a lot of time looking at list formations, whether it's in football or cricket, and talking a lot to player managers. So it's been an interesting journey to here.
It's a body of work you've sort of put behind you too, haven't you? You've sort of been around a bit, and we'll touch on that a little bit later on. But certainly your affiliation with sport and sports management has you've been doing that for quite some period of time. Look, the first time I saw you play, Jamie, cricket at least, was on the Wynyard football ground in the A Reserve. I was playing for Devonport. You were playing for Wynyard. They had two teams in the A Reserve. And I saw this little fella come out and I thought, we'll knock him over pretty quick. He's only about 2'6". And then you're about 13. I think we were lucky enough to catch you in the gully and you made about 27 or 28 runs. But that was a long time ago, Jamie. You must have fond memories of playing cricket for Wynyard.
100%, Nick. It's sort of something you reflect on a lot in retirement, really, just how fortunate. And I've spent a lot of time talking with Dean Hills as well, how both of us just feel so lucky to have grown up in a cricket club where we got to play with our heroes. Like, we were, you know, young men growing up in an older man's football cricket club, and idolising guys who taught us how to play the game, taught us how to win, taught us how to lose, taught us how to compete and have a lot of fun along the way. It was just such a wonderful ground, Nick. And you know, playing against the fearsome Devonport unit, mate, I can still remember, not so much, I don't know if I was 13 at the time, but you guys were pretty terrorising when I was a young fella as well. So, you know, North West Coast cricket was really strong in those days. It was highly competitive, and it gave me my opportunity. So, you know, I often wonder, if I hadn't have been lucky enough to grow up in Wynyard with, you know, the football club on one side of me and the cricket club on the other side of me, exactly where life would have taken me.
I mentioned Maurice Hodgetts there because what a great man Maurice was. He loved to bring on young kids. And I know your dad played a huge role in the cricket club. It must be tremendous to have David, your father, who was a very good cricketer himself and as an early influence. And then, of course, with your brother Stephen, the backyard cricket matches and all that sort of stuff must have been brilliant to add to all of that.
Oh, 100%, Nick. Like, one of my fondest cricket memories is still, you know, I haven't got a great cricket memory, I must say, but one of the fond ones was I was batting with my father at the time I made my first ever senior cricket century. So, you know, as a teenager playing seconds cricket for Wynyard at the Sheffield Oval, you know, I can still remember Dad being at the other end, which was a pretty special moment. Yeah. Probably didn't mean as much to me when I was 13, but when you look back, it was a really powerful memory for me. So, you know, you mentioned those, and every club had them in those days. You know, you had your own set up in Devonport. We had the Jeff Gabies, the Maurice Hodgetts, you know, David Cox, Rhys London, Carl Gaby. You know, we just had a wonderful crew of old, toughened cricketers. Les Allen, you know. They're just wonderful mentors for me, wonderful life mentors, not just in a cricket sense, but, you know, they helped me grow up. They sort of helped me become, you know, the man I am today.
And you do reflect on that, as you quite correctly say. After a little while, I spoke to Jade Rawlings not long ago. I had Jade on the program, and Jade said, "Look, just how brilliant it was to be able to have mentors at the Devonport Cricket Club, also the Devonport Footy Club, that turned him into the type of person that he is." And it's just so important at a young age for young cricketers to soak it all in, listen, and make sure that you are doing your best. And that's brilliant. I mean, Snowy Allen. What a legend of the cricket club. Just to have those guys around is so important when you're trying to form a game yourself and just realise who you are and what you do as a cricketer?
Well, I mean, mate, you just mentioned someone like Snowy, and, you know, I just know the influence he had over my whole career. You know, whenever I ran into Snowy, we'd always talk about the game, irrespective of where my career had gone by that stage. So, mate, yeah, look, they were extraordinary times. It was an incredibly fortunate place to grow up, and, you know, I'll be forever indebted to North West Cricket and the Windy Cricket Club just for the start it gave me, because they were just, I don't know, they were just incredibly fond times, mate, and just great people that gave me my start.
And you went to Hobart to play cricket. You played with university. You hooked up with your old mate Dean Hills, who you were later on to become a formidable partnership at the top of the order for Tasmania. Can you remember your thoughts and feelings about heading off to Hobart to play?
Well, in between times, mate, I had 18 months in Adelaide. So I had a stint. I left Wynyard, went to Adelaide with the Cricket Academy. And at that time, and that's, you know, I was selected from there to play for Tasmania. And I guess there was a choice on returning to Tassie. Do I make the move to Hobart or do I come back to Wynyard? And I suppose I made the call then. It wasn't an easy decision. And I was living in a place with a few mates just near University Oval. So it was a pretty comfortable decision to go to uni. And I know Hilsey, he joined us the year after. So, you know, and that was, look, we've been mates growing up. We're, you know, it's sort of infamous now. We grew up over the back fence from each other and played a hell of a lot of cricket in the backyard against each other and with each other. But it was probably that first union at university that that saw us develop something we truly treasure. I mean, something which we've found hard to explain, the connection that we managed to develop across 10 years of playing for Tassie. So, you know, that was a little bit serendipitous, but, you know, that was, a really fond experience for both of us to play so much cricket at the top of the order with one of your best mates is, you know, it just made it so much more comfortable.
I spoke to Hilsey on this program going back a few weeks ago, and it was just brilliant to have him on. And he said that it was just uncanny. He said we just knew each other's game so well, and because we did, we just get to the end of the over. We'd look around the field. We just knew what was going on. It was a comfortable environment for him mentally, at least. When you've got some of the best bowlers in the land coming at you, it's unique. I mean, over 6,000 runs yourself and Dean were able to put on during your tenure at the top of the order for Tasmania. What was it like that? Just knew each other's game really well?
Oh, we did, and it's something we really treasured and never ever took for granted. You know, it was, we really treasured the opening partnerships that we had, and we just knew the importance of our role in getting our team away to a start. So it was probably fair to say that neither one of us really looked at our own individual scores until one of us had gotten out. You know, we always treasured our partnerships and always looked at the team score whilst we were batting together. So it was just as I said, mate, it's the sort of stuff that we really treasured. It's hard to grow that sort of stuff, and it's hard to develop that type of union. And I suppose as a result, I've really understood, you know, the chemistry that you hear Justin Langer and Matthew Hayden and even probably Taylor and Slater and Boone and Marsh and these sort of great combinations at the international level, at the national level for Australia, sort of talk about through the years.
Do you sometimes reflect, I guess a lot of people would ask you, why don't you think you played Test cricket for Australia? Is there something that you've been able to put your finger on? I know that everyone that I speak to just tick that box. Jamie Cox could have definitely played cricket for Australia, but what do you think it was?
It's quite simple for me now, Mick. I mean, I just wasn't the best in my time, and it doesn't need to be any more complicated than that. I mean, I played a lot of cricket against some amazing players who got opportunity ahead of me, and I don't begrudge any of them because they were super players. And as I said, when you played against them, you really admired those guys. So I think it is almost that simple, and you know, there was never any other reason. I mean, I had moments probably from about the age of 27 to 32 where my numbers were as good as anyone's, and you know, if opportunity had have arisen in that moment, there might have been a test match or two for me. But to be fair, the guys that played ahead of me, I never even sort of held myself in the same regard. I always held those guys at a level where I thought, you're just fantastic players. And if there was a test match for me there somewhere, of course I'd have loved it. I'd love to be honoured to have one of those test match numbers by my name. But, you know, mate, I don't regret anything. I don't look back, really, with anything other than knowing I had the time of my life. I was so lucky to play as much cricket as I did from the state. I was lucky enough to captain the state. Probably the only regret I have is I've never won anything from the state. You know, if that would have really topped it off for me. But, it was a tough time, mate, to try and break into that top order, and I wasn't quite good enough. It's that simple, and it becomes that clear when you retire.
The game's littered with names, Jamie, isn't it? You know, Stewie Law played one game, Jamie Siddons. Darren Lehman had to wait for so long before he actually got to play for Australia, but did nicely when he did that. So I guess sometimes it isn't your time. The War Brothers were around then, and there was the Australian cricket team was super strong. Now, you played at Somerset, and you captained them to a trophy too. Was it like playing over in county cricket and captaining one of the great teams?
Amazing. And it came about almost by chance. You know, I was 29 at the time, and, you know, I looked at it two ways, really. An opportunity came out of nowhere, and it was sort of at the stage of my life where I was probably playing at my best, and thought, okay, it was in 1999, and there was an Ashes coming up in 2001. I just missed the Ashes series in 97, and thought, okay, best opportunity for me is to get to England and play a couple of years of county cricket and try and put your name up in lights. But at the same time, if that didn't happen, it became my international cricket. Like, it became a new version of the game and a new fan base to sort of play for and really get to enjoy. And, you know, I had 6 years at Somerset, mate, and there's such a wonderful history at that cricket club. We had a good team. We became a really competitive team. We won a Lord's final, which I'd have to say to this day, mate, is my proudest cricketing moment. Lifting a cup as captain of Somerset at Lord's is just, you know, that's the boyhood dream stuff. So, you know, that was a truly wonderful time. And I have nothing but the fondest of memories of Somerset, and we've still got fantastic friends over there.
Jamie, stick with us. We'll take a break, get a couple of commitments out of the way, and we'll come back with a bit more. My very special guest on Where Are They Now is Jamie Cox. Welcome back to my Where Are They Now segment. I have a very special guest, Jamie Cox, who is was a wonderful cricketer for Tasmania. He captained Somerset in county cricket. He's a boy from Wynyard. His nickname is, I don't know whether too many people know this, Jamie, but Snoop. When you were playing for Wynyard, I know they used to call you Snoop. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, you would be, Mick. And it's funny, it was one I left behind when I left Wynyard as a late teenager. I still know now if there's someone from Wynyard in the vicinity, because that's the only time I still hear it. But yeah, you're right. As a young man, that's pretty much all I got walking around Wynyard.
You mentioned just before the break that one of your proudest moments was to captain Somerset to a trophy at Lord's, and I'm jealous. I was never ever good enough to play first class cricket, but what a wonderful experience. Can you tell me, thinking back, what's the best innings that you ever played? I know you scored a double century. You scored 250 for Tassie, but sometimes it can be an innings that you've ground out under difficult circumstances that may not even be 100, but does one really stick in your mind?
Yeah, I reckon there's a couple. I've actually been asked that question before, and you're right, it's not necessarily your biggest scores. I'll say there's three, and I won't dwell on them, but certainly one was carrying my bat in a Shield final, 100 and something not out against Western Australia in a Sheffield Shield final. Was in quite tough batting circumstances at the Wacker. It was a proud moment that sort of gave us a chance that unfortunately we didn't manage to win that game. My only Shield 100 at the Gabba was a tough place to open the batting. Like, quite frankly, in Shield cricket, it was a really, really tough place against a great team.
Yeah.
So that's one I treasure. But also, there was an 80-something in, I reckon, my first year at Somerset on a really, really dodgy wicket at Northants at Trent Bridge, which helped us win a game. Nottingham, I should say, at Trent Bridge. So, you know, they're ones that spring to mind. you know, they, as you say, it's not always the time where you make the big scores, but they're the ones that I really treasure and think I've probably played at my best.
Was it an easy decision in the end for you to retire? Because I spoke to Hilsey a couple of weeks ago and he just said, oh, look, I regret retiring when I did. He said, I think I retired too early. He said, I was told in the Tassie squad that, you know, maybe the opportunities might not be there enough for me. But he said, I think back on it now. He said, I had a bit left in the tank. Was it the right time for you to move on?
Yeah, I got too much, mate, to be honest. And Dean's right. He did have a little bit left. I remember the time when he got left out of the team and there was probably a key moment for him to either fight his way back or finish up. I was the opposite, mate. I went into, you know, I'll give the really short version, is that I decided to play one more year after the death of our great mate, Scotty Mason.
Mm-hmm.
And it became, you know, retirement was in my mind. And I pushed through thinking that, because Mason and I had always talked about after he'd had his heart operation, we could open the batting together and have a year together. And sadly, he didn't quite make it. So I decided to forge on and play that year. And I didn't play very well. I played the first two or three games, made no runs, basically. And I still remember I was a young father at the time. I had a young son who was in hospital back in Hobart with pneumonia. He was fine, but just resting up in hospital. And it was the only time, I still say to this day, Mick, I walked out onto a first-class arena one day not wanting to be there.
Mm.
And it just happened to be the very last day. I was lucky enough to do it. It was at the SCG. We were way behind in the game. I remember walking out to bat for the second innings thinking, this is it, I'm done. Didn't last long. Walked off knowing that, okay, my time is up. I've had an amazing time of it and it's time for me to go on and do something else. So I think I was very, very lucky that, as I said, I probably had one, maybe three days of first-class cricket, which was that game, thinking, I've had my time, I'm done here, I've got nothing else to play for. The only regret I have is that Tassie won the Shield final the year after. So,
yeah.
You know, I got out of the way just in time for those young blokes to come in and do something really special, and that's probably the only regret I have, is that if I could have managed to hold on, but, you know, that's selfish, of course. It's still one of my great memories was to be able to sit at Belrive and watch that occur. And the pride that you feel that, you know, there is a group that have managed to do what you couldn't. It was an enormous time.
Yeah, and I guess you've got to be true to yourself in the end, and that's the thing. True to yourself and true to the team.
Yeah, I was done, mate. Look, as I said, I probably got 6 months longer than maybe you deserve. I probably had a few credits in the bank and cashed them all in on the way out for sure. It was I was exhausted. And I've since had conversations with, you know, Ricky Ponting when he retired and Mike Hussey when they retired. And, you know, the interesting thing is when you open the batting at that level, it's actually tough and, like, it's really hard and it takes up a lot of emotional energy.
Hmm.
And we sort of, you know, without sort of, it's almost a form of combat type fatigue where you just don't want to do it anymore. So the sort of thing that used to get you out of bed and get you stirred up and get you going was ultimately the thing that wears you down. And you just think, look, I've not played much cricket since, Mick. That's the sad part for me, is that I was going to be the Morris Hodges, you know, the Jeff Gagey, the bloke that played forever, and just because I still love the game. But the moment I stepped away from Tasmania, I finished that season for my club at Lindisfarne, and I've hardly played since. So, you know, that's, again, a bit of a disappointment because I just saw myself playing the game forever.
You did step into a hot seat, though, didn't you, in 2006 as an Australian selector? How was that dealing with some of the things that you might have to deal with there? Was it a bit confronting at times, or do you know what to expect?
It's an extraordinary honour to be chosen to pick the Australian team when you were never good enough to play yourself, and that was in itself rare. Certainly something you take very seriously. Interesting role. I sort of took it on knowing that it's a role that you can't, I mean, don't expect to get it right, I suppose, is an interesting way to look at it.
It's, yeah.
You can only pick the right team, and the only chance you actually get it right is if you win. And in those days, probably a bit more so than now, in those days it was always the selector's fault if you didn't win. and you sort of get used to that. But as a consequence of doing the role, And I was lucky enough to have 6 years doing it, and a bit like my playing career, by the time I was done, I was completely buggered. And I've since become a real advocate for selectors having tenure, you know, selectors having limited tenure. It's not a role, it's a role that I think needs to be freshened up. It's a role where you've only got so much to give because it takes up so much emotional energy. Now, the conversations, you only get to have hard conversations, if that makes sense. You don't get to have too many nice ones. You're dealing with people's careers, and it really is an emotionally straining job. But by the same token, another incredible honour and something which I love doing, but certainly don't miss.
And also working at the SACA in South Australia, at one of the greatest cricket grounds in the world, must have been brilliant to look out onto the ground. You've snagged that role, and you look out and you think, wow, love playing here, probably. And now I get to operate at this great ground. That must have been a real thrill when you entered working for the SACA.
Yeah, it was a pretty amazing workplace. You know, it was before it was redeveloped, so it was the old SACA ground, which I'll still say was a better career ground. It's now an amazing stadium.
Yeah, I agree.
It was then just a beautiful career ground. And, yep, wonderful place to play. And I used to, SACA, you know, don't ever take this for granted. Don't ever see this as a workplace. This is one of the special magic grounds in Australian cricket. And I think they used to look at me a bit funny, but... it was an honour. It was a real challenge, and I left what was a great experience. In my 2 years working at the AIS in a whole range of other sports before going to Adelaide, so that was wonderful in itself, leading into the Beijing Olympics. But to be given the keys to Adelaide South Australian cricket, and to be given a brief of, you know, Jamie, this place hasn't won much, go and make it win. Was a challenge for a pretty young administrator, really, in those days. And I proudly look back. We had to change a fair bit. We had to sort of make some pretty brave calls and managed to win a couple of trophies during my tenure there, which is something South Australia's not used to. So I do look back fondly to our time there. It was, as an administrative role, it was one of great learning for sure. One where we had to make some brave calls. We had to really change a lot of the culture and fabric of South Australian cricket to try and make the place win, and it managed to do so for a short period of time, which was good.
It's always difficult to come in as someone who's not a South Australian as well, and people would know you from your outstanding cricket career and all that sort of thing. It's difficult to convince people that this person from outside South Australia is now going to tell us how to suck eggs in SA, but yeah, you just have to stick with it, I guess. And just before we let you go, your experience at St Kilda Football Club, sort of bouncing around. I know that you were drafted as a young footballer for Essendon, but didn't end up doing anything. I don't know whether that's correct or not. I think it is. But you obviously love Australian rules as well as cricket, because it's the northwest coast. If you come from here, sport's the go, isn't it?
Oh, look, I probably loved it. Well, certainly as much, if not more, Mick, as a young man. You know, like a lot of kids in the country, I suppose, you grew up playing footy in the winter and cricket in the summer and couldn't really wait for either to get underway. So, you know, I trace that back to what I said before, what a lucky existence to have where you could combine both and play in that town versus town rivalry. It was an awesome way to be able to grow up. Look, the whole drafting thing, I think, was a bit of an accident, quite frankly. I still remember I was sitting in a hotel room in Perth, waiting for what might have been my first Sheffield Shield match, ended up being 12th man. But the phone rang, you know, the old desk phone in hotels in those days.
Yep.
This guy, Noel Judkins, on the other end of the line, who was Essendon's recruiting manager, saying, "Jamie, we've just picked you selected you in the national draft." That was the first conversation I'd ever had with Essendon. And I had no idea that they were heading down that path. And I had no idea what it meant. So it was a funny existence, the draft in those days.
Did you have to nominate back then? Did you have to nominate?
No, you didn't nominate. And it was, as I said, it was quite weird because I had no idea that I was even in the draft and could be selected. So I probably didn't take it as seriously as I should have. And, you know, I ended up staying after my academy year as a result and playing a year at Glenelg and with Graham Corns, and it sort of didn't quite work out.
Yeah.
And that probably was part of the reason why I never pursued the opportunity in Essendon and decided to, you know, make a crack at cricket. So, you know, you do look back, Nick, and think the Bombers were a pretty good footy team during that era.
It's true.
If you'd have had a decent crack at it, could you have? But, no, nah, look, you know, I don't believe in looking in the rear-vision mirror, mate. It's sport's been great to me. Cricket's been great to me. And, you know, as you mentioned, I've been lucky enough to work in it ever since I've retired from playing. So I hardly feel like I've worked a day in my life, to be honest, because you've been lucky enough to be around sport for from the 50 years so far.
Well, you've been great for the game, both footy and cricket. Jamie, it was a pleasure to play cricket against you. It was a pleasure to watch you play cricket and to watch yourself and Hilsey go about your business for Tasmania was something that we always look forward to as grade cricketers up here in the northwest coast, and felt like we had a bit of ownership of you, and I think you're held in very high regard right across the state. Thanks for joining us on the program, and all the best for the future.
They're really kind words, Mick. I really appreciate that little walk back down memory lane, mate. All the best to you.